This is the Friday, September 14th, 2018 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Brian Roach. Brian, welcome back.
Thank you.
Brian, I wanted to make sure we didn't get to talk about soybean meal during the main program, but gosh, we lost, I think, $8.30 per ton week over week from last week. What's sparking that? Is it the African swine fever or another problem or a demand problem that we're having?
We talked about this a little while back, but I think that when you look at China's situation with the African swine flu and how that could begin to back up their meal demand, feed demand, and certainly that has all been part of the long position that traders put on going back to May. I mean, the meal specs were 133,000 long, I think, longest on recorded history. And now we're beginning to continue to unwind that. And the thing that I look at is the meal spreads. And the meal spreads tell me we have more downside in meal prices. So if you look at December, I think we traded 308 close this week or something below 310. I think it's pointing towards something well below 300, say 295 to 290 as a potential downside. And certainly that weighs on bean prices as well. So more swine, more African swine. I think the bigger concern would be is what happens to the meal supply chain and does it begin to back up, especially, meal crush numbers are still very positive. So there's incentive to continue to crank out the meal, but we could be looking at a supply chain that is getting backed up here if this virus doesn't rectify itself here pretty quick, and I doubt if that happens.
And we are increasing crush capacity, we're increasing meal capacity. How much of a problem do you think we're going to have here if we don't have somewhere to ship this meal? I mean, could we be sitting on stockpiles of meal? What would happen in that instance?
Well, not really are we increasing meal capacity so much. We're just running at a high utilization of the existing the existing processing plants. And a lot of the world's meal processing capacity is in Argentina, where they don't really have the beans. They're buying them from the U.S. to meet their meal expectations. So we overall have a lower meal supply because of Argentina already. So I think that helps to ration things. The real thing that I look at is China, and how do they distort the market from an end user standpoint? And really, all I'm looking at is should end users be in here buying meal? And I think the answer will be yes. But I also think you ought to be planning on meal prices maybe being down below 300 potentially, because the specs still have a fair amount they could sell this thing down.
That's a great point, Brian. Looking at end user usage of soy meal. If there is further downside risk, how much of soy meal needs should producers or should end users be locking in at this point?
Everyone's different, and they all, publicly traded companies have long-term buying strategies that are tied to paper mostly. So if you look at a Tyson or somebody big like that, and whereas a mid-sized co-op or whatever, they might book a fair amount of it in 10 to 15, 20% strips. But also consider where that price is. If you're buying meal at $300, how does it work into the P&L, so to speak? And meal's always a big part of a P&L. I think that varies, but my inclination is that it comes in 10 to 20, 25% strips. Mm-hmm. And then they work from that point, whatever that first point is. And maybe some have some bought already, and this would just be augmenting that position. Certainly, if they haven't bought any, then it'll be easy to buy meal down around 300 on the D's or sub 300. Those numbers historically always look like a good deal later on.
Absolutely. All right, Brian, let's take a couple of the social media questions we got sent in this week. Starting here with Lee in Minnesota, is the demand for cover crop seed to the point where co-ops and dealers are taking notice?
Good question. I would, not knowing the exact demand by the farmer of cover crops, I would back into it from the supply side, which is as co-ops continue to consolidate, what I see with co-ops and some of the larger ones is that those consolidations always bring extra line items. Okay, so two co-ops get together. If Growmark buys a co-op, they always bring line extensions to what they already do. Mm-hmm. And I would think that type of product, bringing that to light for someone who maybe doesn't see it today, it would come with that type of move. Outside of that, it's pure economics, and I wouldn't know the exact answer to that, but I think that that's probably how it happens.
Okay. We'll take another question here. Alan in Minnesota. We've got a couple of Minnesota farmers today. Corn ending stocks are down a lot from last year at this time, but the price is virtually the same. When will dropping ending stocks bring higher prices, or will the USDA project more corn acres next year to squash any rally attempt?
Good question. And I talked about that in the main segment where I looked at 1.7 in corn ending stocks, far tighter than when we put the low in last year, trading 2.5 on the market. Mm-hmm. Okay, but then we ended up around 2, I think, is where we're going to carry in a 2 billion number. The market will trade weather into January, February, March of South America off of these levels here, I think, and also will trade into next year. We still have to grow a crop and demand. The last time we were at a 1.7 ending stocks number, I think, was 2 years ago. We did come in and add a lot of acres that next year, but the crop still has to be grown. And I think those are the rallies that that the writer is talking about there, that you're going to have to learn how to harness those and know when they come, is it a good opportunity or not. But I think there's opportunities coming in corn, especially with the carryout looking like it is compared to the last couple years.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about the corn market in particular, we didn't get to talk about it in the main program, but I think it's relevant, especially right now as we head into planting season for South America, is how many acres in Brazil and Argentina do you think will switch from corn to soybeans?
Good question. And, this week I was talking to farmers about what happened this week on the 10th of September, and it's first planting date for beans mm-hmm. in Brazil. And so we have been seeing a 2-3% increase in bean acre intention from Brazil, and with total production backed off slightly because we normalize yield. So we don't always take the last year's yield. We give some sort of trend line yield to it, and I'm sure that's what the Brazil government will do. And I think corn acres down there, that will be a wild card until we see how the first crop goes of beans and we start talking about the second mm-hmm. crop, which is really the real driver of how big the Brazil bean crop is. So too early to tell.
Too early to tell. Yeah. All right. Something yeah. we'll definitely keep an eye on yeah. then. Taking another question here from Jonathan on Twitter. How, if bookings don't increase soon, at what point in the export season will we be too far behind to hit the USDA grain export paces or goals?
And we're talking about corn, you think?
I think grains in general, but...
Well, we're just starting.
Right.
We're into a new crop year here,
yeah.
And so I would say that the USDA's tendency would be not until we get well into December, January, before we start adjusting exports, because so many things can mm-hmm. change, and particularly on beans. Beans is a big wild card, but I would say end of year, first of the calendar year before the USDA typically ever starts making adjustments.
Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Another question here from Brian in Illinois, Would selling at the money straddles on the March corn futures be a good way to generate some extra cash, or is that still a bit too risky at this point?
Straddle. You'd be selling the straddle in a hole, what I call. You're
okay.
down into a, prices are very oversold. We're at December lows mm-hmm. here. We just put in new lows.
Right.
And to be adding a short-sided trade at lows seems to me that would be too risky. You're expecting the market to trade quite a bit lower, and if it does, you end up with a long position on one side that you, I guess if you think that you want to be long December or March at 360 and you're okay with that, but it doesn't seem to me it offers enough upside. I'd look for another way to do that.
To generate a little extra cash.
Well, I'd look for another way to, assuming that we're at some pretty good lows here in corn, I would like to see the specs a little bit shorter, but let's just say this. Let the specs show you their hand on the shortest side they are willing to get, and then look at maybe some sort of a trade, maybe a strangle might be another way to look at it, where, you're on both sides of a range and you have some room to work with.
And maybe we should back up there for just a second for producers that don't know what a straddle is. Brian, can you walk us through what that is?
Estrada would be selling an in-the-money call and the same in-the-money put at the money. And so if the market goes down, you end up making money on the short call, but you end up with a long put that turns into a futures contract. So you're long at that strike price. I don't think it's that interesting. Obviously, the person that wrote that, Brian, is more sophisticated in his trading ideas, and that would be a high-level sophisticated trade for our business. Mm-hmm. And so I've not actually ever done one, but I would say that's probably a little bit on the extreme side. Okay. of producer hedging, and I wouldn't necessarily call that much of a hedge in most cases. So
maybe not recommending it to some of the more amateur producer traders.
I would never recommend that. Okay. To anybody.
All right.
Actually.
Final question for you here. Talking about the live cattle markets, we have a question from Matt in Wisconsin. He says, do January live cattle contracts, are they pushing new highs? And how much gas is left in this rally?
After today's move, I'd say, you know, you got a lot of that upside that I was thinking. We were looking at 118 February as a good spot to, you know, we wanted to see things get up to that 118 and then maybe see how we did. And obviously, I think we've cleared that. And now 124, 125 looks interesting to me. But both on the fats and the feeders, I think you have to begin laying off some risk here. These are big moves, and to be waiting for more, I think, might be getting a little bit greedy.
Right. And we're heading into the fourth quarter when this quote-unquote wall of cattle is coming.
There's a big production number that's creeping in here. So I think next week would be a good week to begin laying on some short-sided hedges or a forward contract or a combination of the both.
Okay. Yeah. Brian Roach, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Join us again next week when we'll explore how tax credits are helping the wind industry spin faster, and Elaine Cubb and Walt Hackney will sit across from me at the Market to Market table. Until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.